com. Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of AHA Presents About Education. I'm Neil Kreisel and I'm your host every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 10, and on Saturdays at 4. We're brought to you by Deckers, makers of Uggs and Tevas, Pielefon Wendy Foster offering fine clothes, good food, and vintage wines, Montecito Bank and Trust proudly serving our communities and their financial needs for over 40 years, Habitat for Humanity building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter, and CSU Channel Islands. No matter which of their academic programs you choose, you will be at the center of your educational experience. And we're here today with Colette Shaburn, who is the Executive Director of Pacific Pride, and Patrick Lyra Lanier, who is the Pacific Pride Foundation's Program and Service Manager. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having
us. Thanks for having us.
Pacific Pride Foundation is a national organization, is it not?
It is not. We are actually a local 501c3. We established just over 40 years ago, and we serve Santa Barbara County mainly, and then the tri-counties peripherally.
But isn't it a national? There's no other Pacific Pride?
There is no other Pride. It's just us.
Well, now it's really special. I just had the local chapter.
So I will.
We should begin again.
So we are our own 501c3 organization. However, we do partner with through a membership organization called CenterLink, other local LGBTQ centers from across the nation. About once a year, I actually travel to connect with them, and then we're connected with places like Palm Springs, Los Angeles, San Francisco, on a as-needed basis. But we are our own functioning nonprofit.
So, you mentioned five liberal places. Are you or your affiliates any place that's red? I mean, are you in the places that
are? We are all over the country. Okay. So, yeah, so that was a couple to point to. I will say, too, that not every city and not every community has an LGBTQ center, like Pacific Pride Foundation or any of the places that I just named. But, yeah, we are our own. We are our own organization, and then throughout the country in what politicos might say flyover states, they're there too.
So what is the mission?
For Pacific Pride Foundation?
Yes.
Yes, great. So our mission is to serve the Santa Barbara County LGBTQ community through advocacy, education, and service programs.
And what about health services? Do you provide that as well, or at least education?
Yeah. So within that scope, we do all kinds of different things in our programs and services, including a whole arm of education and prevention. So that is education and prevention around HIV and hepatitis C specifically. And we do that through free and anonymous testing services. We do that through a syringe exchange, so people can come in with used syringes and get a one-to-one new syringe, so that's eliminates the spread of HIV.
And there was an article. Let me put it this way: I'll use an article as an example. There was an article in the New York Times 2 days ago about how doctors don't ask their patients their sexuality. And there was, I don't know if you saw it, where the people who were in LGBT were saying, I will tell, they don't ask. Mm-hmm. And so do you recommend, if someone is new to town, quote-unquote friendly medical help?
So we do have a lot of resources. So we don't have any medical people on staff, but we work closely with Cottage Hospital, County Public Health, Sansom, and other private practice people. And in fact, we did a training sort of regarding this with our full Santa Barbara County Public Health Department about sexual orientation and gender identity and how they collect that information from their clients. Starting when they walk into the door, so that they're kind of avoiding exactly what you're saying. Because what we know from data is that as people don't feel fully seen in medical spaces, they start self-selecting out of those, and then that creates further health problems down the way.
I remember when my wife and I were having our first baby, there were very strict rules in hospitals that men could not be anywhere near the delivery room. And what developed were advocates in New York that advised and consulted with young couples to tell them their rights. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how much of your advocacy and education programs are helping particularly young people to know how to maneuver in the system, and particularly in the medical system. Is that one of the things that you work on?
Well, yes, we've done a lot of trainings with many helping organizations in town, including many medical facilities, on the best practices for their paperwork. Because actually the onus should be on the organization to be providing an accurate welcome, or at least a space in paperwork or in their greeting process for that client or patient to sort of identify the accurate gender identity they have, which does not always match the way someone looks, as well as their sexual orientation, if that has a bearing on the medical care or therapeutic care that they're seeking. So we do teach our sort of population how to advocate for themselves, but we also definitely push those who are in the position of power, which might be those who are sitting behind that receptionist desk or the doctor, to sort of have paperwork that's already allowing for the collection of that data, so nobody has surprises.
And so one of the things that you're in charge of is programs. So what are the programs that you provide?
Oh, a good many. So I oversee the LGBTQ plus program, and that includes our counseling at the Pride
what
Center.
What does plus mean?
The plus means that there are multiple other identities still in formation that we're hearing about, other letters, you might say, in the alphabet soup, which is the sort of colloquial metaphor we use. So you have identities like pansexual or asexual, and rather than keep adding letters to the long list, we just sort of are keeping it LGBTQ plus, and then people ask about the plus, and then I can provide extra education if needed about those other identities. So
there was one that came out again in the New York Times this Sunday, which is someone like me that's getting older, I appreciate. It said that there is, I forgot what they're called, it's people that find someone who's smart, sexually attractive, irrespective of gender. And irrespective of what they look like. It has to do with, there's a word for it. I'm thinking, I have hope.
Yeah. Well, this is really what we tell people when they sort of talk about how, oh, what's with all these letters, right? You hear that often from people. And the fact is that right now we're mapping the human being with greater specificity and nuance than we ever have before. We're realizing there's unique attractions and gender identities that are not simply gay or straight or male or female. And there's a lot of nuanced in-betweens. And it's kind of a great time to be alive because we're talking about them more explicitly culturally, I think, than we ever have before.
But you know, it's interesting. The paradox is we had two young girls on a year ago who were lesbians at Santa Barbara High School. And I said, it must be really liberating to be in a town like this because it's so accepting. And they said, what? And
yeah.
And one of them, who was this beautiful young girl, said that the people are bullying me because, and this is the interesting thing, she said, because they don't think I'm really a lesbian. They think I'm just doing it to get attention.
Yes.
And so one of the things about this whole view of a spectrum is that some people think of it as sort of like a young person just playing. And it's sort of, in my view, it minimizes some of the struggles that people go through.
Well, so first of all, a young person's job is to explore and to question. Mm-hmm. And arguably, one could say that the human being's job in the course of a human lifetime is to question. Mm. The idea that we are ever going to be one label sexually or even with gender, the idea that we're going to stay that for 80 plus years, that's actually not necessarily a very realistic idea. And data shows that over time, people's sexualities, their partnerships, their style of relationships, their gender identities change. And so actually, I really appreciate and honor those young people who are saying, you know, I want to look this way with my clothing, but I identify internally as this. And actually, it's really rare. Because of the stigma of being different, it's really rare that anyone does that for attention.
Well, but you know what? This creates a real dilemma for people who have very young children. Mm-hmm. And there's this whole debate about how you should accommodate a child who identifies at 2 or 3 years old. Is it a stage? Is it something that we should mm-hmm. embrace? And what happens when they're 12? Do you do hormones? Is it something that they're going to regret? So there's this, I guess, and you could speak to this,
yes,
how difficult it is to deal with and help parents get through this.
Yes. So first of all, gender identity forms young for all people, transgender people and cisgender people. Cisgender means you are not transgender. And it's interesting to notice that we don't question when...
What does cis stand for?
On the same side. As a prefix, that's what that means, CIS versus trans, which means across or away from. So at some point in our history, some people were saying transgender people and normal people. And you can hear how othering that is of transgender people who've been around since the beginning of human culture and civilization ever. A field of anthropology documents this. So transgender people are also normal. We just need another word for the other people, and that would be cisgender. That's the word we use. So when you have a little boy-bodied kid, and I taught preschool for 10 years, so I have a lot of experience with this, actually. You have a little boy-bodied kiddo who identifies as a boy and says, I'm going to grow up to be a daddy and I'm playing with trucks. We don't question that he knows his gender young. So then we have to ask ourselves, why do we question the three-year-old who has a boy body but says, I feel like a girl inside? It's interesting that culturally we feel the need to pressure that child or put questions on it, when really a child who identifies as a different gender at the most is going to possibly change their hair, their clothes, and maybe a name. None of that is irreversible. And also, it's a very personal family conversation that I find that culturally, we really invade families' experiences with this and try to get into those conversations, which are really specific to the individual child and the individual family. And as for hormones at 12, that's a medical decision every family needs to know about. But what's fascinating to me is how public we make these decisions, as though the whole society and community has any kind of say in the medical experience of an individual child, whether that child has ADHD, whether they're transgender, not that being transgender is the same as having ADHD, but there's unique qualities to every child, and each family has a right to think about those in a different way.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Deckers Brands, the parent company of global lifestyle footwear brands UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Anu, invite you to experience their new brand showcase firsthand in Goleta. Discover new product, try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand, and get a peek into the company's headquarters. The brand showcase is open for business Monday through Saturday from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coromar Drive in Goleta. See you out there.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program.
To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, using innovative social-emotional learning and character building to help teens. We're here with Colette Shabram and Patrick Lyra Lanier from Pacific Pride Foundation. And we're talking about programs. I suspect you have programs for teens, and that's one of our big focuses here on this show. So tell us about the programs you have for teens.
So we have what we call our Proud Youth program, and we have a lot of shared youth who really enjoy AHA's program and then also ours. We look at the teenage population in our program as 12 to 17 years of age. We connect with them in school through supporting LGBTQ school clubs. We go to support those clubs on a monthly basis, see if they need any help connecting with community speakers and the like. We have a weekly youth group that meets from 4 to 5:30 for LGBTQ plus and straight and cisgender allies. And that's a social, sort of therapeutic social support group. We also actually are about to go into our 90 Days of Summer program, which is a life skills building program for LGBTQ plus youth and our allies. And that each week we do a session, and those sessions are led by youth advocate leaders that we don't nominate them anymore. The program's so popular now that we actually opened up an application process for youth who are interested in getting leadership training from myself and from my colleague Deja as mentors, and then they run those life skills sessions with other sort of adult speakers that we schedule to come in, but our youth are the ones leading it.
40 years ago, when I went to my first therapist, I was always looking to make sure no one was coming in or out that I knew. Today, do kids, particularly the younger ones, a 12-year-old, he comes to you have a space. Are they looking around to see who's going to see them come in the door? Or is there a stigma among even the kids that really want help feel that they're going to be shamed in some way?
It's a really great question. I'm glad you asked it. Some kids these days have family acceptance, which means they're probably not looking over their shoulder, actually. They love that we have a rainbow flag in our window. Some youth don't have family support and are struggling with that lack of support at home, and they might worry that if they came to the LGBTQ center that, you know, maybe something would happen where they got in trouble, but they're really just seeking some care for their mental health, or they're seeking other people like them. So it really depends on the individual. I will say that a year ago, on June 12th, which is when the Pulse massacre happened in Orlando, that was the day that we started our summer program last year. And our youth still came into our center, even though there was a scare as well at the LA Pride a year ago around safety and someone possibly threatening that celebration. But our kids, we had 15 to 20 kids still show up very scared, a little shaken up by that event, but they came together and we talked about it, and they said it was very important for them to be there, to be in the space, to take up that space, because they were not going to allow fear to control the way that they engaged with each other as community. So they're very courageous, and they are concerned at times about privacy and safety, which we do provide as best we can, and of course with confidentiality as well, protecting that group, the youth group.
And what about outreach? What about the kids who either don't know or aren't really ready yet? Did you have an outreach program?
I would say we get to them through the school clubs that I mentioned, for sure. Folks who can't get maybe to our center off-site but connect with us at school. We also make really direct use of our social media and online resources. So if we do a community panel of adults who are LGBTQ speaking with our youth, we might film that panel with the adult speaker's permission, put that online so that youth who are off-site can access our programs and services. We just Facebook Lived our panel following we did on last Saturday, a day of education and activism, which was focused on a few different things, but a little bit on the concentration camps in Chechnya right now, rounding up gay men. And we Facebook Lived that so that our community off-site, including youth who are maybe more internet savvy but not able to safely join us on-site, could access it. So we try to make use of that as well as an outreach tool.
One of the really major issues I know in this community is how undocumented immigrants are feeling threatened by the new administration. I would imagine a Hispanic gay person has double issues today, where they're getting it from all sides. Do you have, because this is a town, I guess 40% of people are, you know, Spanish speaking or first or second generation. Do you have programs that facilitate their entry where their family mores may be different from other people's mores, and that maybe there's more resistance there?
Yes, all of our sensitivity trainings are intersectional. So we look at differential outcomes around coming out processes for example, white communities who are LGBTQ plus and Latino, Latina, or Latinx individuals. There's some data that shows coming out processes are different depending on your cultural background, which makes sense. These things are very culturally specific. So our sensitivity trainings, the language we use, our bilingual staffers, our translated flyers and the like are geared to sort of invite people in for conversations. We are not an agency that really asks parents and families to be walking in waving a rainbow flag. We actually appreciate confidentiality, discretion, and that each family and child has a very different experience of identity and of processing their identity. So we, our counseling center is a great example. It's fully confidential. It's a great space where you can walk in not looking over your shoulder per se, and it's a very discreet entrance from the main agency entrance. And so you're able to kind of come in and get the support you need that's specific to your family and your background and not feel like you're having some sort of specific social justice template kind of forced on you.
This question may not be relevant in today's environment, but I wonder if there's any issue with a gay person still looking down at a transgendered person or...
Well, that's very relevant.
Okay, so there is, so is there work then within your own group for acceptance? So it's not just them against us, it's us having to deal with us?
You have that with every sort of targeted minority. You know, there's the need for coalition building and, of course, intra-group things that need to be worked through. Many gay people are not transgender, so they don't necessarily have the experience of being transgender or having their gender identity be unique. And so there can be sometimes a gap in understanding, in education, and sometimes in compassion when a gay person is looking at a transgender person. It also can go the other way because sometimes transgender people are heterosexual, right? And so there's different power structures and things people can access. And so it's really a conversation the whole community is having nationally, globally, locally, and also person to person. Our center is fully trans inclusive and LGB inclusive in all the letters. We've got everybody covered actually on staff as well as in our programming. But that is an ongoing thing that we see. I just saw an article talking about how some transgender folks don't feel fully welcome at pride celebrations all over the country. Ours does a pretty good job of it, and we hear positive things locally. But there's bigger city prides that might be more oriented towards, you know, the celebration of a gay male experience, for example, that is not necessarily the same as a transgender experience. And by the way, there's not one transgender experience. There's a lot of different kinds of ways to be transgender, too. So that's part of the story.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on the Santa Barbara News Press Radio Station, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and Santa Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
For more than 20 years now, the unique landscape and people of the Santa Barbara community have helped grow Deckers brands into the lifestyle footwear leaders they are today. Newly opened at their headquarters in Goleta, the Deckers brand showcase allows you to explore and shop the UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ah New brands while you're likely to discover something new or potentially receive an in-store special offer. At 250 Coramar Drive in Goleta, the showcase is open to the public 10 a.m. to 7, Monday through Saturday, and 11 to 5 on Sunday.
Celebrating 50 years of serving loyal regular guests and first-time visitors, the Pierre Lafond Market and Deli invites you to enjoy their huge selection of fresh-baked sweets, cookies, carrot cake, muffins, and the famous farm cake, granola, Oreo popcorn, wine cake, homemade soups, and the popular fresh juice bar, Or get a coffee drink or fresh squeezed juice and peruse the famous wall of greeting cards at the Pierre Lafon Market in Delhi, open 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. daily in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, Improving Attitude, Creating Social Harmony, Bridging the Achievement Gap for Teens. We're here with Colette Shabram and Patrick Lira Lanier from the Pacific Pride Foundation. And we were talking about different programs. And one of the things you mentioned briefly is sensitivity training. That sensitivity training to whom? Is that to people who are straight, or is that sensitivity training among your own constituency?
So yeah. I think we actually don't really define it in that sort of terms. It's actually for different businesses, nonprofits, medical providers. So our audience is as diverse as you know, our full community is. But we will go anywhere from you know, a business to a hospital to you know, a small nonprofit, and do trainings about best practices around welcoming LGBTQ clients or employees, or how to deal with, you know, HR practices around current employees.
The Secretary of Education yesterday was testifying before Congress, and when asked about a dozen times whether or not she would withhold funding to schools that were discriminatory towards gays, she refused to answer, saying that it was unestablished law, whatever that means. We're dealing with a political environment here. Yesterday, the governor of Texas called back the legislature for July to take another shot at a bathroom bill, even despite the fact that when it was done in North Carolina, it cost them hundreds of millions of dollars. So, you know, we're talking about sensitivity training at Santa Barbara, yet there's this, you know, very aggressive, mean-spirited activity that is more reminiscent of the 1940s and 1950s than where we are today. That's a challenge, isn't it?
There are 127 different anti-LGBTQ bills in state legislatures across the country currently. So yes, the environment is, I would even say, hostile. Welcoming trainings are a step forward. They don't just happen in Santa Barbara City. They happen in Santa Barbara County. So there are different places where we go. We've been to Lompoc, Santa Maria. We've been down to Oxnard. So there's community conversations happening all over the country. And I think one of the biggest pieces of sort of like the LGBT civil rights movement is visibility, because that erases any has potential to erase the stigma of somebody you think you know into somebody who you do know. So that kind of visibility, that kind of one-to-one connection, helps break down barriers, and I do think pushes us toward fuller equality. But there is some very dramatic pushback happening right now, and that's why places like Pacific Pride Foundation are important.
Yeah, I know. I find that whatever your philosophy is, I find it really quite astounding when someone says the reason we have to restrict transgendered people from using the restroom of their birth certificate is because of the danger. And as I understand it, there hasn't been one incident of a transgendered person creating any problem, whereas how many congressmen have gone into the bathroom and gotten themselves into trouble with...
Right.
Or even how many transgender people who are using the bathroom that matches their identity have been physically harmed because of doing that. So not even, you know, that sort of a an incident, but this is a real everyday occurrence. It happens in businesses on State Street.
Yes,
so it,
it
isn't
does.
Just something that happens, you know, in Georgia or, you know, in the deep South where we can't connect with it. This is literally on our main thoroughfare, and we get calls about, you know, some of our trans women trying to use a women's bathroom, and businesses call us and say, we don't know what to do. We're calling the police. So our connections with businesses are important. Our connections with the police department, law enforcement is important so that we can handle that situation, you know, as a wraparound unit and not just somebody who may or may not be, you know, doing something unlawful, which it is not.
You know, the one of the major, issues that AHA deals with every day is bullying. And, you know, bullying has become a really serious part of growing up today. Actually, looking at the politics, it's a serious problem for everybody.
Yeah.
But we're just talking about young people now. So now you have somebody who is struggling with their sexuality or dealing with the sexuality that they choose against the preconceived notions of their friends. How much, you know, outright bullying takes place? Is this is such a nice community. Is it much less here than you would expect, or is it more than you would expect? And how do you deal with it?
Whatever. So the first question is, you know, when you talk about bullying, are you including cyberbullying? So
yes,
that's question number one. No, I mean, I'm just saying when we think about it, because I think there's a lot more nowadays that happens online than happens in person. And through anecdotes from our youth program and some of our safe schools surveys, we are seeing that there are still anti-gay comments being made. We did a training with SBUSD, specifically the PE and health teachers, and both teams were reporting hearing, you know, these derogatory "that's so gay" comments or F-A-G-G-O-T while out on the field. That's still happening. Transphobia is strong and well, and by the way, not just in students, also in, you know, grown-ups in positions of authority. So it's very much here. We say it's a nice town. And I mean, I'm from the Northeast, and in the Northeast, people are pricklier, but they're sometimes more honest, for better or for worse. And out here, I find people tend to be really smiley and then to do or say things subtly that are pretty harmful and hurtful. And so it's challenging to track it.
Well, and the outcomes of that, we know data-wise that 50% of transgender youth will attempt suicide before they're 20, and 30% of lesbian, gay, and bisexual youth will attempt suicide before they end their teen years. So this bullying has, you know, direct consequences and can take lives.
Absolutely.
And, you know, there's been a lot of work about the damage that happens to the psyche of bulliers.
Yes,
so,
exactly.
So, you know, there's you know, people who are just neutral on this whole subject ought to be involved, because people who tend to bully have issues that they need to deal with. And the lack of empathy in this society is really what I think is one of the reasons why we have such a split country.
Yeah,
people really don't have a sense of what the other goes through. And that's true for even, you know, someone like me that, you know, is not the red state demographic. I won't read a lot of the conservative stuff. So I'm just as guilty as the other side that I think should be reading more of my stuff. I think I'm pretty up to date on this stuff, but I learned something in the notes here, and that is LGBTQ. The last letter is Q, stands for
It stands for queer and questioning.
And for older people, you've dropped the Q. And I asked you before the show, why did you drop the Q? And I was really surprised and understand the answer, which is...
Yeah. Well, we don't drop the Q per se, but we're sensitive about where we say the word queer, because queer is a trauma trigger for many people who are elders in our program, who were beaten or verbally assaulted and sometimes sexually assaulted for being LGBTQ. And while those acts were happening, we're called like a dirty queer, a stupid queer, that kind of thing. And in around the time of the AIDS epidemic, specifically ACT UP and other younger activists started to reclaim the word queer to make it a positive. So that if someone comes up to me and says, "Hey, you stupid queer," I say, "Yeah, I'm here and I'm queer and I'm proud of it. What are you going to do about it?" And suddenly I have the power. But it's not easy to reclaim a word when it is an active trauma trigger for you. So we try to respect that for many people, that word is painful and not something that is necessarily a tool of political liberation. It is for younger generations, and we also are not going to tell them they can't use it. So we just try to observe and teach about the historical context around that word.
Yeah, it's so interesting. It's not only true for your issues, but think about Bill Maher's use of the of the N word on radio, on TV, and there's this misunderstanding. I'm sure 16-year-old black kids may use it, but mm-hmm. it's not for him to use it.
It is not. And there are in groups and out groups mm-hmm. and power structures, yeah. and words have history, right? So that's what we talk about, is the history.
Right. You're listening to AHA Presents About Education on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Available only at the company's headquarters in Goleta, the new Deckers brand showcase features the latest footwear from UGG, Teva, Sanuk, Hoka, and Ah New brands. You're invited to stop by to experience firsthand what makes Deckers brand so unique. Discover new product and try on a range of offerings from your favorite Deckers brand at their retail stores. Now open to the public 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Monday through Saturday and from 11 to 5 on Sunday at 250 Coramar Drive in Goleta.
You're invited to dine indoors or on the secluded garden patio, the sunny patio, or the covered creekside patio with fireplace at Pierre Lafond's Montecito Wine Bistro, where you'll enjoy the popular pizzas and many other dishes from the wood-burning oven, daily specials from Chef Victor, and selections from the elevated wine menu featuring Lafond and Santa Barbara Winery wines. Open daily at 11 for lunch, wine, cocktails, dinner, incredible desserts, and a daily happy hour from 3 to 6 with very unique appetizers, in the Plaza del Sol, Montecito Village.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA, helping teens achieve goals, surmount challenges, stop bullying, and communicate and listen effectively. We're here with Colette Shabram and Patrick Lyra Lanier from the Pacific Pride Foundation. And I wonder if we could just step back a moment and talk about your own personal journeys. So tell me, Colette, how did you become interested in this fight, actually, and advocacy?
Yeah, great question. So I was actually born and raised in Santa Barbara. So the schools that we're talking to are about in this program, I attended those schools. I came out to myself and my family when I was in college, and then came back to Santa Barbara for a couple family reasons and looking for a job. There was a job opening at Pacific Pride Foundation for a development associate. And I had done a little bit of events and fundraising work in college, both in volunteer and paid. And so I was interested in that. I've always been interested in making a difference as a career. So when I saw that job opening, I thought to myself, okay, if I put this on my resume as, you know, a young 20s person, I'm going to be maybe not outing myself because there are plenty of straight people who work at LGBTQ centers. But because I'm gay and I'm also working at, a known center, what is that going to do for my future career? And I thought about it. I remember this, thinking about what that might look like and how that would out me. And then I thought, well, whatever I do next, I'm going to want to be at a place that will accept me for who I am. So that was kind of my first step into this whole battle. I actually wanted to be a lawyer. And this kind of put me on a different path, but I do deal with a lot of legal system questions, Supreme Court system questions. I've worked at Pacific Pride Foundation for almost a total of 10 years now. And I've also worked at the Human Rights Campaign, which is the national, that's maybe what you were thinking about in terms of what's the national scope. Mm-hmm. And it's now an international organization dealing with policy and rights for LGBTQ people. So I've worked there, which was stationed in Washington, D.C., but I worked literally almost in every state in those couple years that I was there, and then came back to Santa Barbara for the executive director role. So that's kind of me in a nutshell.
It's a shame that, you know, you gave up being a lawyer. We need more lawyers and not enough advocacies for people who are not being treated right.
Well,
and, and lawyers can do that.
That is so true.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's still time. Who knows what's next?
Please. And Patrick Lira, how did you get started in this business?
Oh,
If I may call it a business.
Oh, yeah. No, my path is somewhat circuitous. I was teaching preschool for the first 10 years of my professional life, at starting at Yale University. And I'm largely motivated.
Excuse me, Yale University has a preschool?
Oh, they have the Yale Child Study Center and many amazing lab preschools there on the campus. And I was blessed to learn about teaching there through a fellowship after college.
I know some immature Yale students, and I was wondering if...
Yes, they would often come and be our work study students and help us unload dishwashers and take care of kiddos. I looked at preschool, but also have since become a licensed marriage and family therapist, starting actually at Pacific Pride Foundation's counseling center over seven years ago as an intern, a counseling intern. And I'm motivated to do this work and to connect with Pacific Pride because actually, if I'm most honest, I am the transgender and queer survivor of abuse at the hands of my biological parents when I came out. At 17, it was not an easy time. I was abused verbally, financially, spiritually, and over the course of a decade. And if I can do anything, whether through our programming, whether through our school outreach, whether through engaging with people who are struggling to learn about LGBTQ stuff, even if they're really, you know, even if they're pushing hard, I'm motivated to help people understand that this is a natural and beautiful part of the human experience. Possibly because I didn't receive that acceptance at home, I'm really loving being able to provide it to youth and young adults. As a therapist, I love working with our populations. I find most of our population carries family trauma, and this is somewhat unique to our population compared to other targeted minority identities. You might be a person of color, and if your biological family also shares experiences of racism, you might be able to maybe be able to share that as a family. But if you're an LGBTQ kid born to straight parents or in a family that is otherwise populated with mostly straight folks or cisgender folks, you can't always have someone understanding your experience. And so I think the work we do at Pacific Pride is really critical, and it's been very healing for me to help clients as a therapist there, and then two and a half years ago about to take on this role of helping to oversee the programming. It's very, it's good. It's very healing for me.
What age did you come to terms with transgenderism?
You know, that's a great question. So I came out at 17 to my parents as gay, and I came out 2 years ago as transgender. This is because I was never taught about transgender identity. I identify as neither male or female. That's called agender, that prefix A meaning without. Mm-hmm. This is a non-binary gender, meaning it is not a gender that's male or female. So I'm not like Caitlyn Jenner, who transitioned from one medically male body to really realizing who she'd always been, which was a woman or a girl. I didn't know, even though my whole life, when the preschool teacher would say, boys line up over here, girls line up over here, I would be in the middle having panic attacks because neither line spoke to me or felt like it was where I was supposed to go. I've been feeling this way since age 3. I remember it. I just didn't have a word for it until 2 years ago when my teenagers said to me, you know, Patrick Lira, at the time I was just going by Patrick, which was my given name at birth. They said, you sound like you're agender. You sound like you're non-binary like some of us in the group. And I started crying in the middle of the youth group. I got it together enough that they still felt safe and contained, because the grown-up is not supposed to lose it. But from that point on, it's been a beautiful journey of really coming to terms with my whole self, because I came to terms with my sexuality pretty young for someone who graduated high school in 2001. I was the first person out as a same-sex attracted person, but I didn't really know about gender, because I'd only ever seen transgender stories that were transitions from male to female or female to male, and neither of those stories were mine. So that's a recent, I would say it's always been there, but I recently started to describe it and come out.
You know, we had a guest on about 6 months ago. I'm sure you know the woman. She has a group, a support group for transgendered kids. She's active at UCSB and a bunch of other things. And one of the many things she said that really surprised me was that when she heard from her two-year-old that she identified as a girl, she had to go to Los Angeles to find help. And she had a great support system in L.A., went to great doctors, because the doctor up here said, I don't know what to do. There's nobody up here. So she went through 2 years down in L.A., and then she realized, this is nuts. I'm driving.
Yeah.
Why didn't I start a group? I wonder if anyone else is in the same position. And immediately she got 25 families to sign up. So here you have, this is, you know, 2000 and something.
Yeah.
And she goes to a doctor in Santa Barbara who says, well, there aren't anybody here. There isn't anyone here like you. So even, so you can imagine, I can imagine how isolated people feel, because it's not generally known that there are other people in the same in the same situation.
Well, yes, and for, and you know, if you think about school environments where we do a lot of education as well around the Fair Education Act, and we do safe schools trainings with teachers in SBUSD and all over the county, people use a very binary language, boys and girls, ladies and gentlemen. And if you're someone, and a large percentage of our youth identify like I do with their gender as in between, both and or neither. And so when language in spaces is just male or female, you can start to feel invisible. And that invisibility is what contributes to the higher suicidality that we do see with transgender individuals.
And that's why what when people say, you know, enough of this politically correct, you know, worrying about pronouns, they don't realize that these pronouns are integral to people's, you know, very self. And it's not just being politically correct.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, sort of misses the whole point.
Yeah. The easiest example of that is if I were to walk up to a cisgender male who is not transgender and I started calling him her, he would not like me calling him a she. You know, he would get offended by that, right? It wouldn't feel good. Pronouns are a core part of who we are.
Yes.
They really are. They're not preferences.
You're listening to AHA Presents About Education, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
Here's a question. Do you enjoy experiencing the best of Santa Barbara? Tasty restaurants, scenic hiking, local banking experts. That's right, local banking experts. Montecito Bank and Trust was voted best bank again by the Santa Barbara Independent, Santa Barbara News Press, and San Ynez Valley News Readers. Plus, they have over 40 years of experience, 10 branches from Solvang to Westlake, a convenient on-the-go mobile banking app, and a savvy team of local decision makers. Visit Montecito.bank today. Montecito Bank and Trust, member FDIC.
Founded by a UCSB grad, Deckers Brands has grown into a global driver of lifestyle footwear. From humble beginnings in 1973, Santa Barbara has been a key element of the business, defining the company's culture, providing home base for many employees, and inspiring product innovation each year. For a first-hand experience, stop by the Deckers Brands headquarters in Goleta, 250 Coromar Drive, from 10 to 7, Monday through Saturday, 11 to 5 Sunday, and shop their new brand showcase retail test lab. Guaranteed, you'll see a new side to Deckers' portfolio, from footwear to handbags to home furnishings.
In 1962, Pierre Lafond founded the first post-prohibition commercial winery in Santa Barbara County. In 1972, he planted his first vineyard in the San Ynez Valley west of Buellton, and later hired legendary winemaker Bruce McGuire to continue to build on the stellar reputation that Santa Barbara Winery has achieved for more than 50 years. Today, you're invited to experience the award-winning wines at Santa Barbara Winery at the corner of Yananali and Anacapa, and the Lafond Winery at 6855 Santa Rosa Road in Buellton.
Habitat for Humanity of Southern Santa Barbara County is building strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter. Habitat has completed construction on 19 new homes for affordable homeownership. We'll build 3 new affordable homes this spring and has repaired over 35 homes through the A Brush with Kindness program. To learn more about how you can support Habitat by volunteering, donating, or shopping at the Habitat Restore, visit sbhabitat.org or call 692-2226.
Welcome back to AHA Presents About Education. AHA helps teens manage their emotions, support their peers, and serve their community. We're here with Colette Shabram and Patrick Lyra Lanier from Pacific Pride Foundation. And during the break, I found out Colette is engaged to be married.
Didn't know you were going to bring that up. Yes, I am.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
And what are the chances I'll be invited to the wedding? Zero, right? It's a good chance of zero. So we have to talk about money. So how can people help? You guys do an incredible job, and it's such an important area, not just for LGBTQ people, but for everybody else in this system, in this society. So how can we help? You have events.
Thank you.
And you have the National Day of Coming Out. Is that one of your events?
Yeah. So let me give you the biggest thing that's coming up at the end of this summer for the full community. Everybody is invited. Free to the community. And that is our Pride Festival. So our staff and a team of about 15 volunteers in the community produce and create a Pride Festival for Santa Barbara City every year, although more than just the city is invited. That's going to be at Chase Palm Park on Saturday, August 26th. And we are actively looking for donations to make that a free festival. So what we do is we fundraise all summer for this festival. We want to make it as available to anyone and not cost prohibitive. So it is free, but that does cost money to create it. So by people giving us sponsorship dollars, we are able to make this festival happen. Anything that we make and don't spend goes back into the programs and services that we have been talking about hour. So it doesn't go into, you know, anybody's pocket. It goes right back into the community.
And you're a 501(c), so that everything is tax deductible?
And it's tax deductible.
And how do you give? Do you have a website that you can give on?
Please go to PacificPrideFoundation.org.
And Gay Pride Month is in June. So
we're in it.
Did you choose August by mistake? Or
great question. So actually, if you track sort of when Gay Pride festivals happen, it's everywhere from it's throughout the year, actually, depending on the city and the community. We chose August. We had it in July for several years and then pushed it back into August, actually because of some parks scheduling. But also because it's a nice culmination of the end of our 90 days of summer program with our youth. And it captures more City College kids that are coming back into session. And then we find that fewer of our community are traveling to either bigger cities like Los Angeles, San Francisco, or New York for a Pride Festival. And they're also coming back from their travels by the end of August to prep for the school years and, and all that kind of thing. So, so the end of August is a nice time.
And we should be running out of time, but before we end, we should point out that there was an article in The Independent recently that talked about all of the events that are now available in Santa Barbara, social events, whether it's at the Canary Hotel or other bars and social places to provide a safe and fun place. That's something that you've been involved with, correct?
We've been doing our Canary Mixers, also free to the public, for 10 years now. Oh. So it's a place where you can't always get onto the rooftop, and a lot of times it's a paid ticket. But this is something that we give back to the community because there's no gay bar, gay neighborhood, gay coffee shop in the community. And so this is a way to network, to see each other. I know stories of people who have met at Canaries and now they're married and partnered and all of that kind of thing. So it's a nice social space for our community to gather. And then there are also other programs that are going on that are community-led, which is great to see. All of that we try to capture every month in our newsletter. So if you go to our PacificPrideFoundation.org and sign up for our newsletter, you will get updates about those events as we know them.
So if you go to the website, get the newsletter, make a donation, and you'll be doing a great thing for the community. Colette and Patrick Lyra, thank you so much for being here. It's a wonderful organization, and We'll be here next week with another edition of AHA Presents About Education.